I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Those plans we heard so much about for mobile giant Sprint and T-Mobile to join forces, well, it's not a done deal yet. Attorneys general from more than a dozen states are suing to block the move, which the Justice Department has already approved and the FCC chair is recommending. Today, the latest on where we stand with a possible merger between T-Mobile and Overland Park-based Sprint. Then, college football fans in Lawrence and Manhattan are heading into unknown territory as new coaches take over the programs at K-State and KU. How will the teams respond? Sports writers share their thoughts on that and other college athletics coming in the new school year. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Those plans for Sprint and T-Mobile to merge into a single wireless carrier face new challenges today in the wake of a series of attorneys general from across the nation now suing to block the union. One of those attorneys general is a Republican from Texas, making the lawsuit a bipartisan affair. One analyst now says the odds of this merger going through are back to about 50%. The chief beef here, consumers are losing out on this deal despite efforts to help a fourth carrier, and that's Dish, get off the ground. Last month, the Justice Department signed off on this deal, so there are lots of moving parts here. Where do we stand, and what does this mean for consumers? Let's find out. With us this morning, Peggy Lowe has covered the Sprint merger for KCUR News. Peggy, nice to have you here.
Good morning, Steve.
You know, I can't help but wonder, how big a deal is this lawsuit from what is now 15 attorneys general seeking to block this union, Peggy? A lot going on here.
Yeah, it is. And I feel like I've written about a million stories that say, you know, the merger cleared another hurdle today or didn't. But so today the FCC chairman did say that he approves of this merger. We're not surprised. He said that in the past. He is going to take it to a vote of the FCC. That's expected to pass because they're all Republican. All the Republican commissioners on the FCC like this deal. To your question, though, Steve, about the attorneys general. This could really muck up the deal. And everyone thought it was political in the beginning because a lot of Democratic AGs from Democratic states had signed on to it. But last week, an AG from Texas, a Republican, signed on to it.
And this changes the math here in a big way because now you have a bipartisan opposition here to what's going on.
That's absolutely right. And basically what they're all saying is that this will make the cell phone market more uncompetitive, so it's going to drive up prices for like you and me.
So I'm a little confused here. If the FCC signs off on this thing, because you just said that there are most of the Republicans on the panel favor this merger, doesn't that sort of make this thing become official then?
It could make it official, yes, because already the other federal agency that needs to sign off, the U.S. Justice Department, has done so, saying that they came up with this deal that made all those antitrust concerns go away. They basically said T-Mobile and Sprint have to sell a bunch of, their
assets.
Right. Mm-hmm. To Dish. And so then that will make Dish the fourth cell phone provider in the country.
Okay. So if the FCC signs off, that's one thing. But this lawsuit from the attorneys general, ultimately, in theory, that could block it if the suit is successful.
In theory, yes, it could block it. And there's a lot of analysts out there talking about this. And a lot of these analysts are like, yes, it's going to block it, or no, it's going to block it. So
well, joining us now is Carrie Bennett. She's general counsel for the Rural Wireless Association, and she works at the law firm of Womble Bond Dickinson. Carrie, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
I'm just wondering how you're viewing the prospects for this merger as we sit here, just talking to Peggy Lowe. So many moving parts, the lawsuit from the attorneys general, news from the chairman of the FCC just this morning saying he backs this merger. We now expect the FCC to get on board with it. How do you see the prospects for this thing actually going through?
The attorney general's lawsuit is going to play a big role in this. That's not scheduled to go to trial until December. So there's some delay there. There's also some review with the Tunney Act on the DOJ decision and lots of opportunity for people to comment. So it's not a done deal by any means. And I wanted to add that there was a 16th attorney general that signed on Monday from Oregon.
I was going to ask you about that. Do you expect more states to sign on to this lawsuit opposing the merger, Carrie?
I think that's a very good possibility.
Yeah. So help me understand this then. If the FCC signs off on this in the meantime, before this case goes to court, you said in December, what would that mean?
It just means that they got one more level of approval, but they're not there yet. They still have this last hurdle to jump through. And there's still a possibility under the Tunney Act review, the comments get filed with DOJ. DOJ has to respond to them and file them with the court in DC. And it's possible that the judgment that they agreed to will be opened up and modified.
Hmm. Mike Dano now joins us via Skype. He's the editorial director of 5G and Mobile Strategies for Light Reading, which is an independent digital media platform providing daily news and analysis for the global communications, networking, and services industry. Mike, nice to have you too.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You know, for folks out here trying to understand what all this means, it's giving a lot of folks whiplash, Mike. What's your prognosis for the prospects for this merger going forward?
Yeah, it's definitely a complicated process. And from my understanding, we're in sort of uncharted territory here with tentative approval from the FCC and the Department of Justice, but this lawsuit from state attorneys general. So, it seems like it's still the odds that this deal actually will go through are still sort of in the range of 50-50, whether it's going to be ultimately approved or not.
Carrie, do you put those odds about the same place?
I think I do at this point in time, but as more states join in to oppose the merger, I think it puts the odds lower of it going through.
Huh.
And time is not on the party side trying to get this done.
Peggy Lowe from KCUR, who's here in the studio with me. You know, one of the big questions here is if the merger does manage to go through, what all this means for the landscape of Kansas City. You know, the name of the Sprint Center, the free wireless service aboard the streetcar line, and jobs out there in Overland Park. Let's walk through those one by one. What do we know about the name of the Sprint Center and what's going to happen there, again, assuming the merger does go through?
So all I've been told about the Sprint Center, because I checked with officials there when just a couple weeks ago when the Justice Department put their okay on the merger, they said that they have had this great relationship with Sprint, and they're under a 35-year agreement with the city to operate the Sprint Center. So that, you know, they did that when it was built in 2007. So they just basically didn't tell me very much. They said that they will work with the new owners moving forward.
We'll work with what we got going forward. In theory, that building could be named the T-Mobile Center?
In theory, but there's already one in Las Vegas. So I don't know that they would double dip on that one.
Okay. What about jobs, Peggy, and the keeping of a second headquarters out in Overland Park, where Sprint has long been based? What are the prospects there?
This, of course, is the thing that a lot of folks here in town are worried about, and you get a lot of different answers to this. So there's roughly 6,000 workers still there. They're, you know, that huge campus,
yes,
out in Overland Park, they're now basically in like one main big,
yes,
building. And so the T-Mobile people are promising that they are bringing a new call center here. That would be 1,000 new jobs.
Okay.
But then others are saying, you know, there's going to be redundancies between the two companies. You don't need two marketing VPs. You don't need, you know, that kind of thing. So they say that there will absolutely be layoffs. That said, you know, the Sprint and T-Mobile people are saying that's not going to happen. But a coalition of union and other folks, including, I think, the Rural Wireless Association that Carrie represents, are saying there's going to be job layoffs.
Carrie, tell me about that. What do you expect?
Well, you don't get economies of scale by keeping all the employees. So I think when you have a consolidation, a merger, you're going to have job loss. And the Communications Workers of America are predicting $30,000 in people losing jobs across the country.
30,000.
Okay. 30,000.
Yeah. Mike, would you expect T-Mobile to keep a second headquarters in Overland Park in addition to T-Mobile's main headquarters out on the West Coast in Seattle? I mean, a little history here. Once upon a time, Sprint had two headquarters when Nextel was in the mix, but that didn't last long. Sprint made Overland Park its headquarters and jettisoned the Virginia site. What do you expect to happen here?
Yeah, I mean, the companies have promised to not conduct layoffs as a part of this merger. So, you know, that's what they've promised. You know, that said, that I agree. I don't see them keeping two VPs of marketing or any other, you know, redundant positions. And so while they'll probably keep the same number of employees, at least for a certain time, I'm sure that the mix of that employee, that employee base is going to change. As for keeping two headquarters, you know, companies have offices all over the country for different reasons. But again, in the long term, I don't see why they would necessarily keep a completely separate headquarters in two different cities.
So you have your doubts about Overland Park's prospects going forward.
Over the long term, I think in the short term, over, you know, a 5 or 10 year time period, over the short term, in terms of like 3 to 5 years, I would be surprised if they shut it down because, like I said, they've promised to keep it up for a certain amount of time.
That's interesting, Peggy.
And they just remodeled one of the main buildings, and they're saying they're going to call that HQ2.
HQ2. Okay.
I think another point that you need to keep in mind is when you have this kind of consolidation and you have a loss of jobs, because you will have a loss of jobs. The folks that are competing for those jobs, their wages then go down because their skill set is not as needed as much because of the consolidation. That's another point to keep in mind.
Mike Dano, the other big question as we talked this morning about this possible merger of Sprint and T-Mobile, maybe the billion-dollar question here is, when it comes to consumers, who will benefit from this merger? Who will lose out from the merger? That's what has regulators up in arms here. A lot of concern that consumers are taking the short end of the stick. How do you size it up?
You know, that's an interesting question. And it's a little bit unclear, but I think if the merger is approved, several things are going to happen for consumers in Kansas City and all over the country. The first thing that really not much is going to happen initially. You know, Sprint and T-Mobile are going to merge their networks. They're going to, you know, merge their brands. And so eventually you'll see one combined carrier, but that merger process does not happen overnight. So, undoubtedly, the coverage will get better of the combined company, but it's going to take probably 2 to 3 years for that, the coverage and the speeds that they offer to improve. The other big factor that is going to affect consumers all over the country is that if the merger does close, Dish Network will become a cell phone carrier, but they're going to be using T-Mobile's network. So they're going to enter the market, but they're going to enter the market under their own brand, but the services will work on T-Mobile's network initially. So that will be a new thing. We'll have a new provider, essentially.
Carrie, help me understand why having a fourth network is regarded by federal regulators as so vital to maintaining an adequate level of competition. Wouldn't three carriers give you that?
I think three is an invitation for the three surviving to collude on pricing and raise prices in conjunction with one another. So it's not going to give that maverick fourth player in there, and that's where the role that T-Mobile has traditionally played. So we see T-Mobile becoming more like an AT&T and Verizon. And the biggest competition that has been taking place, it has been between T-Mobile and Sprint. But since this merger was announced, T-Mobile has been just running gangbusters ahead of everyone. If you look at T-Mobile's last quarter earnings report, where they reported their subscribers, they had 1.8 million new subscribers.
Wow.
And where did they get those subscribers? They're already competing with AT&T and Verizon. Sprint lost about, I think, just under 200,000 subscribers, which is not a lot of churn given that this merger has put everything on ice for Sprint.
So the thinking is that T-Mobile carry is taking those subscribers from AT&T and Verizon?
Yes.
And they're going, those subscribers are making that switch. Why?
Because T-Mobile has lower pricing, and they're the uncarrier, and they're competing to get those customers. But once they acquire Sprint, the thinking is that they will be like AT&T and Verizon and won't have to work so hard. They're going to increase their subscriber count with this merger alone by about 50 million subscribers.
Okay. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about the potential merger of Sprint and T-Mobile and all the obstacles it still faces. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is the number, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. We had a Sprint employee in Midtown, Kansas City email us this. The Reston, Virginia site is still very much in use and staffed, the former Nextel headquarters. This employee says it's just not marked as a headquarters. So I guess Reston is still in use out there. The other big thing you wonder about, Mike, are all the major carriers still bearing down on developing this next generation of wireless, which is known as 5G?
Oh, yeah. 5G is a big topic right now among all the carriers. And yes, they're all deploying 5G. In fact, Sprint is in the process of launching 5G in New York City right now. So they're all moving forward with 5G plans to one degree or another right now.
Carrie, what is 5G? Why is it a big deal?
Well, it's a good question of what is 5G. I don't think we all completely know what 5G is going to be. I think of 5G as lowering latency, doing more to connect things to the internet, automated cars, artificial intelligence, all of the things that we have in our homes that want to be connected to the internet.
I think of it, Carrie, as faster. Is it faster?
When I say faster, download speeds will be faster, but I think what we're really trying to do with 5G is lowering latency. So think of being able to perform a surgery remotely. So if someone lives in rural America and needs to have open heart surgery, and you had the capability of performing that from a surgeon in New York City, you want to have the absolute lowest latency possible, and you don't want to be the first one undergoing that surgery.
Yeah. If 5G gets out to the rural parts of the country, Peggy, go ahead.
The idea of building the 5G network, T-Mobile and Sprint have really sold this merger, saying that they need each other to build that network. And they also say, we need this network to compete with, say, China, to compete internationally. So that was one of the big, big pushes of it, too.
President Trump is really concerned about this, right?
Absolutely.
He wants America to be first. He's concerned about job retention here if we don't beat China to the 5G goal line here.
That's absolutely right. And, there's all this talk about Huawei and like how much power they have amassed. And so that was really one of the selling points from T-Mobile and from Sprint while they were on Capitol Hill.
If the merger fails, Mike, what does that mean for 5G? Is it still coming regardless?
Yeah, well, I mean, T-Mobile and Sprint are both deploying 5G right now separately, apart from the merger. So it's certainly possible to deploy 5G. The reason that they want to merge is because they want to combine all the spectrum that they own. And if they do that, the amount of spectrum that you have directly correlates to how essentially good and fast your 5G network is. And so if they combine their spectrum assets, their 5G network is definitely going to be faster and bigger.
Do you buy the notion, Mike, that this country's in a race with China to get it first, and if we don't, we stand to lose jobs?
I would disagree with it for a little bit, but also agree with parts of it. I mean, the argument that it's important to be first in 5G is because if the U.S. has a really good, fast, and extensive 5G network, then companies like Lyft and Uber and DoorDash and all the other ones out there that are developing new fancy applications, they're going to do it here in the U.S. And so if you're in a company that's inventing a car that's going to drive by itself that works on 5G, you'll need a really good 5G network to develop that and to sell it and to make money from it. So if the U.S. has that 5G network, they'll do that here in this country. But if the U.S. does not have a good 5G network and China does, well, then you'll take your company to China and you'll develop it there instead, because you can't commercialize it here in the U.S. and you can only do it in China. That's the real sort of that's the basis of this whole race to 5G.
Kerry, if the merger goes through, you know, should customers expect an immediate price hike? I thought there's been a promise made that there will be no price hikes for several years here.
Yes, that's true. The new T-Mobile has promised not to raise prices for 3 years, but nobody speaks to what happens after 3 years. And as Mike alluded to, this whole merger and mushing everything together will take probably 3 years to shake out. So about the time everything's shaken out and we're rolling out more 5G, then I think the excuse is going to be, even probably before the 3 years is up, is like, well, now we're giving you 5G. We were saying we weren't going to raise our prices on 4G. So there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in the promises that the new T-Mobile has been making, including the build out to rural America, which we haven't discussed yet.
You know, Peggy, we haven't talked about this either. What happens if this merger does not go through?
That is such a great question when you talk about the billion-dollar question. Essentially, Sprint Executive Chairman Marcelo Claure has been in front of lawmakers on Capitol Hill in D.C. saying, if this doesn't go through, he's sort of like, well, we'll go back to the banks, we'll try to get more money, but we are hemorrhaging money. And they have hinted at bankruptcy. So Sprint is really hanging on to this for its future.
So they might be in trouble. If this thing doesn't go through, they might be out of business anyway. That's a possibility here.
They have hinted at that, yes.
Mike, do you buy that?
I mean, Sprint has been struggling for a long time. They have pulled off a number of sort of financial moves in order to keep themselves afloat over the past few years, but the outlook is not good for them.
I was going to say, why would banks continue to loan them money?
Exactly. That's the reason. And, you know, as a part of this merger process, they have made a number of filings with the FCC that really lays out what a difficult situation they're in, including the fact that they've been giving away service to certain customers for free for a year, and they still can't gain a bunch of customers through that. So they're literally giving away service right now without a whole lot to show for it.
Hmm. Kerry, let's turn to the whole question of the build out in rural America. What would this merger mean for rural providers, some of which now rely on the Sprint network? Will they be able to, you know, to continue providing the service they're providing now, or how do you see it?
I think it's going to be problematic because Sprint leases a lot of its spectrum to rural carriers to provide services to rural America and rural consumers. So we've already had discussions with what happens after the merger, and T-Mobile has made it clear to our members that they don't intend to continue those leases. In addition, there's roaming agreements that are in place between Sprint and the carriers. And those roaming agreements are often 20 times less than what the carriers are able to get with T-Mobile. So we see an immediate jack up of the roaming rates, which will severely impact rural consumers.
So do rural consumers, Kerry, get the short end of the stick here more than anybody else, perhaps?
I think that they will get the short end of the stick. I think in parts of rural America, there are some subsidies that can keep costs down for a short period of time, but not for the long term.
Now, you represent wireless providers in both Kansas and Missouri. What concerns are you hearing from these providers when it comes to the merger?
Primarily that T-Mobile won't talk to them. They've tried to have discussions with them about what happens after the merger, and they've been told by T-Mobile that they're not a necessary part of the equation, and that they don't have any interest in serving the areas that they serve.
Hmm. You know, Peggy, we began this conversation by talking about, I think it's 16 attorneys general now who have filed suit to stop this merger. I forgot to ask you, where do the attorneys general from Kansas and Missouri stand in all of this?
Well, your producers have asked the Kansas AG to come on, and I think that they turned down the request. I haven't checked with Missouri, but I would highly doubt that they would join in on that. I also want to say, when you asked about the short end of the stick, who would get this in this merger, a lot of the AGs and a lot of the Democrats on Capitol Hill say It's going to be low-income people who buy those prepaid services, because Sprint and T-Mobile both have those brands, you know, like Boost and Virgin and that kind of thing. And so those are typically cheaper services, and they feel like, because they're going to have to sell off pieces and parts of that, that low-income folks may not be getting 5G anytime soon.
Okay, we'll have to leave our conversation there. Lots to think about as the Sprint and T-Mobile potential merger continues to move forward or stand still, depending on how you look at it. Peggy Lowe is here. She covers this merger for KCUR. Carrie Bennett is with the Rural Wireless Association. She's the general counsel for that organization. Mike Dano joined us via Skype. He's the editorial director of 5G and mobile strategies for Light Reading. Thank you all for a good conversation. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
When we come back, we're going to talk sports and college football and volleyball and a whole lot more. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. My email newsletter is being sent out every Monday. Subscribe at kcur.org/Kraske. It'll take you 10 seconds and get exclusive content from me and highlights from the up-to-date team. Get a little more Kraske sent to your inbox each week. Go to kcur.org/Kraske to sign up. How many monuments to the westward expansion can you find around the Kansas City area? More than you might think. Tomorrow we examine memorials to pioneer mothers. That's Wednesday or Thursday on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, football season is back, and that's a good thing because this is football country. There's all kinds of talk about the Chiefs, of course, and we'll talk about them today. We'll also run down area college football, and we'll throw in a dose of college volleyball and women's soccer as well. All this comes as college football celebrates its 150th anniversary this year. Back with us once again is KCUR sports contributor Greg Eklund. Greg, welcome.
Good morning, Steve.
He's joined by an old colleague of mine, Dennis Dodd, a senior writer on college football for CBSSports.com. Dennis, nice to have you. Nice to see you again. Welcome.
You bet, Steve. Thanks.
So more than 700 schools are fielding college football teams this year. That would suggest the state of the game is pretty healthy. But with so many universities struggling financially, Dennis, you know, how do all these schools afford to field college football teams?
It's really a presidential and administrative decision, and I'm not just talking about the top, you know, FBS, which is the 130, the top schools in the country, but really down to NAIA Division II, III. If a president can lay out that welcome mat that says we're NCAA football or we play football, it gets into all kinds of things: research grants, hiring ability. Enrollment.
I was going to say it attracts students,
It attracts students.
People make fun of the idea, but it really does matter to students to go to a school that has that kind of football.
Yeah, and it's not just Alabama. It's, you know, Division III places in Oregon. There's, I think it's Linville is a Division III power, small school, but they sell that. People go to those schools because of the experience. Now, that sounds Pollyanna, but it does mean something.
Greg, you buy all that?
I do. It comes down to numbers on campus. You put feet on campus when you have a football program that has 11 starters on each side of the ball and several, you know, substitutes upon that. So when you're adding 60, 70, 80 students to your small campus in many cases, that's a significant deal.
Having said that, college football is expensive. That's a lot of scholarships. That's a lot of equipment. It's a field. It's maintenance. It's coaches, Dennis. We're talking hundreds of thousands of bucks.
It's really, really expensive. You talk about an FBS team, which again is the highest division, 85 scholarships. They usually carry about 100 players. Some schools have more walk-ons that aren't on scholarship, but somebody has to pay for that. The athletic department has to pay for those scholarships. Now, some schools that operate in the green, or I'm sorry, in the black, that make money, they have athletic athletic corporations. Mm-hmm. Florida has one. Florida State has one, which is a fundraising arm of the university that pays for the scholarships. But in the college atmosphere, I guess, it's all about breaking even. These are supposed to be nonprofit organizations,
yeah,
but they bang heads against a for-profit model in those athletic departments.
You know, so how is college football celebrating its 150th anniversary this year, Greg? That's quite a milestone.
It really is. There's going to be, and Dennis, you could probably fill me in a little more on this, but I think some of your traditional schools, like your Ivy League schools, like Princeton, are going to have some special games, special halftime activities. There are going to be some throwback games, but there are all kinds of things that the College Football Foundation has planned for this fall, all around the country in conjunction with the anniversary.
Yeah, we're talking about this just in the wake of, you know, stories, doomsday stories a few years ago about concussions and the future of football. It doesn't seem like interest is waning or that college programs are going away despite all this.
No, yes, in one way and no in the other. I have a story being posted tomorrow on that where it's kind of the battle for the soul of college football. It's reached that point where you're either for it or against it. You know, we don't know what we don't know largely about head trauma, just that repetitive hits are bad. But we don't know if all the rash of suicides are caused because of that. On the other hand, the game's never been safer. The NCAA is partnering with the Department of Defense on a multi-decade project to study head trauma, and they've done some good things. But it's still, you know, bigger, faster, harder. The game is more dangerous, but it's more safer than it's ever been.
So you don't get a sense that it's going away tomorrow, Greg?
You know, no. It seems like on the youth level that the numbers have been affected. But when you get to the high school or the college level, and maybe it's because some of the youths are turning to football at a later stage in their lives, after starting out with other sports. But the numbers are still there. I mean, high school teams are still fielding football teams in numbers like they have before.
You know, you think of this big 150th anniversary year, you think about big rivalries in college football. You know, Dennis, you get out around the country, cover lots of big games. What do you enjoy them when it comes to a great rivalry? What do you enjoy the most? Where do you like to go
just
hang your
hat? Just being on the ground at those games. You know, I always say this. At LSU, a man with no money, no shoes on, or no clothes on his back could walk through an LSU tailgate and not spend a dime and be fed for a week and got enough to drink for a week.
Mm-hmm.
It's that experience, which is really unique to pro football. Kansas City, you know, frankly, comes closest to that with the tailgate.
Mm-hmm.
The rivalries, it's not just the rivalries that sustain it. I mean, you're going to see more at Alabama, Auburn, or, LSU in Florida,
right,
or USC, UCLA. But there's a reason these people buy the season tickets, because they want to be part of it every Saturday.
Is there a greatest rivalry in college football?
Well, I just mentioned Alabama, Auburn. They like to think so. I've seen Michigan and Ohio State is right up
from
there.
From my childhood, that would be the one I'd point to.
When Missouri and Kansas played, I thought that was underrated nationally. I think we all know how big it is, where you can literally trace it back to the Civil War.
Yes.
We all know that. But it's really, when you get down to that level, it's the worst and best of the human condition, because there is actual hate there. Some people...
Yes.
Really take it personal, the other team.
Well, speaking of the rivalry between Kansas and Missouri, Greg Eklund, where are we? Because the two schools aren't facing each other in college football or college basketball or maybe anything else for all that matter.
On the football side of it, I don't see, and actually in basketball too, I don't see anything imminent with those two schools playing each other. Missouri wants to. Missouri would love to renew that rivalry. I don't think they do in Lawrence.
Why? It's money. People would love it.
You know, and you would think, given the years that have passed since Missouri left the Big 12.
You don't even 12, hear any talk about it.
There's been a change in administration on each side, and you would think that sentiments would change a little bit. Maybe eventually they'll come around again. But as far in advance as football schedules are made in this day and age, there's nothing imminent on that.
You know, Dennis, it just strikes me as interesting that, you know, KU is in one football conference, Mizzou's in another, K-State is with KU in the Big 12, Nebraska, just up to the north, is in the Big 10, Missouri's in the SEC. To what extent is that a detriment to following major college football in this part of the country, this fragmentation that's gone on?
Yeah, I thought it was better when they were all in the same conference. For a person like me, it's great. You know, the SEC is 2 hours away. Missouri, the Big Ten, 3 hours away. Nebraska, obviously.
You live here, you're saying.
I live here. I live in Overland Park. And obviously the Big 12 is right here. The basketball tournament, I think, is the best in the country in March every year. So you've got that to draw from. Oklahoma's close. You can be there in 5 hours. So Kansas City's really a good Central College location. You know, that's another whole show talking about conference realignment. It is what it is. It's sad in a way because I do think Missouri, in its heart of hearts, would still like to be in the Big 12. The money's so good at the SEC, you can't turn it down. Kansas State, I think, are just glad to be in a major conference. 9 years ago, Greg and I talked about this when conference realignment was going. There was a very real chance that Kansas, the University of Kansas, would have ended up playing basketball in the Big East or the Mountain West if this conference broke up.
Wow. Well, what does this do for the fan experience, Greg? This notion, again, that these schools are in so many different conferences.
I think from the fan experience that if you want to single out in a direct way, it has affected Kansas City. It has been the big game at Arrowhead Stadium, which we used to have on a regular basis. We don't have that anymore.
I still can't believe that people are dead. What caused this to happen to begin with?
Well,
to stop doing these rivalry games between KU and MU.
I think there's a lot of sentiment for teams not to lose a home game on their own campus, and there's a lot of pressure in those communities on which they play, where their campus is located, to keep those games in town. There's just a lot of money to be lost if they'd happen to move a game to a neutral site, and it would have to be a pretty good sweetheart deal to pay a school to play at a neutral site these days.
Huh. Well, let's turn to KU and K-State and their football programs. Both have new coaches. That's what makes it notable. It's Les Miles at KU. It's Chris Klieman at K-State. Les Miles is the better known of these two. Dennis, tell us about him.
Well, he's a guy at LSU that won a national championship in 2007. He won two SEC titles there, started out as a head coach at Oklahoma State, was successful there. And I think this is right one of three people walking the earth as a coach right now that's beat Nick Saban twice.
Wow.
And so this is what Kansas is getting. Now, he eventually figured out that he wasn't going to get a top-level job for whatever reason. Age, he's 65 now, a little bit conservative in his offensive dealings. Quirky guy, but there's plenty of quirky guys in sports. Forget college football.
He's quirky how?
Oh, eats grass. We know that.
He eats grass.
He was caught on film 1 year at a game at LSU in his concentration, reaching down, picking up grass and eating it to the point that when he was introduced at KU at a basketball game at halftime, they brought him a tray of grass.
And he
ate some of it.
No kidding.
But he's quirky. He's a great guy. I think Kansas is lucky to get him. The fact that Les Miles wants to be there, whether that was the only job he could get or not, he's a top-level coach, so I think they'll be fine.
Is this the guy who's finally going to turn this program around, Greg?
I don't think in KU's position they really had a better candidate. I mean, to get a guy like Les Miles, who was out there for the getting, it was a great hire for KU for what they needed and for the spark that KU needs to turn its football around.
Have you seen an impact in terms of recruiting already or
I
not?
I think so. I think there's been an upscale recruiting class, not only for what's coming in this fall, but I think he's already getting verbal commitments for beyond this season.
Expectations for Les Miles are what, Dennis?
I think in years down the line, he can get him to a bowl game. I happen to think they're a 2-10 team this year. What hasn't been, and Les has talked about this, they're not even close to the 85 scholarship limit, and that starts to affect depth before you even talk about talent and what they can do on the field. And there's only so much you can do with scheming.
So he can't even fill out his roster. The challenge at KU is so great, you can't even get 85 players.
Right, to the point that their athletic director, Jeff Long, he wants to pursue legislation that says, let us get 50 over a two-year span. The limit is 25 per year. And let us decide how we want to do it. Maybe we get 35 one year and 15 the next, just to get back to the 85 so they can compete.
Boy, that's something. Okay. At K-State, it's Chris Klieman. Greg Eklund, tell us about him, because he came here from North Dakota State. He's seen as a young up-and-comer, a different mold than Les Miles.
Very much so. An upward-trending type of head coach who was extremely successful at North Dakota State and is coming off another national championship at the one, I think it's the FCS,
yes.
FCS level, which used to be Division I AA. Extremely successful up there at North Dakota State. The AD at K-State knew him well because the athletic director was also up at North Dakota State. So there is a familiarity there. And so for somebody to come in like Chris Kleiman with a solid track record and succeed and try to fill big shoes left by the retirement of Bill Snyder, I think Chris Kleiman is up to the task.
I was going
to
say, it's an impossible task, though, given how Bill Snyder will be regarded in years to come.
I wouldn't say impossible, but you know, those big shoes sizes are looming.
At Mizzou, Dennis, what are the expectations for Barry Odom, the head coach there? How tough is the SEC this year? Does it even? It's always tough, right?
It's always tough, but the signs are pointing up for Missouri this year. Their schedule works out to the point that a lot of people look at Missouri and say, well, they should be 8-0 by the time they play at Georgia in November. They've got a top quarterback, a graduate transfer in Kelly Bryant from Clemson. They've got
MU does
Missouri does they've got an All-America tight end. They've got a returning rusher, Larry Roundtree the third, I think it is. Offensively, they're going to be very, very good. Where they haven't been able to stand up since they've gotten into the SEC is enough defensive linemen to compete. But I think this is going to be a watershed year for Barry Odom, for the doubters about him. I think they're going to have a very good season.
You know, how do you keep track of all these players at the college level? I mean, as tough as it is in the pro level with players changing teams all the time, how in the world do you keep track of the college?
You just kind of absorb it. I mean, when this transfer portal thing started, and that's another story, but there was a website out there that tracked all these transfers. I spent a few minutes looking at all the transfers in the country. I can't stop counting at 700. I mean, some of that sinks in, I guess, is my point.
At least you hope it
some
does.
Some of it, yeah.
Right? If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking this morning sort of a fall sports preview with Dennis Dodd, who covers sports for CBS Sports, and KCUR's Greg Eklund is also here. Greg, up in Nebraska, is this a breakthrough year for the Cornhuskers with one of their own, Scott Frost, entering his second year as a head coach now?
I think there's high hopes up there. I think he is the type of coach, another great hire. He had turned around Central Florida when they were, a few years ago, hand-in-hand with KU as the only winless teams in the country. Hmm. And then he turns Central Florida around and gets them to play in a major bowl game, and then they beat an SEC opponent in a bowl game and then gets hired by Nebraska. He's only in his second year. Wow. Again, a big rebuilding effort with the Huskers, but I think they're also on an upward trend.
To the point, they started the season 0-6 last year. Wow. Worst start at Nebraska since at least the 40s. At that point, you're worried about the locker room fracturing. They won four out of their last six games, and now in a very mediocre, I would say, Big Ten West, why not Nebraska? Greg's right. Scott Frost is a hell of a coach.
Huh. This area, meantime, Greg, has two other collegiate football powerhouses in Pittsburgh State and Northwest Missouri State. What about those teams' prospects this year?
Well, for Kansas City fans who want to check them out head-to-head, they'll be playing at Arrowhead Stadium.
That's a big deal.
It's a great tradition. It's big to have Pittsburgh State back in the fold at Arrowhead, because for years and years, those two teams had met head-to-head at Arrowhead Stadium, but Pittsburgh State was one of those teams that didn't want to give up a home game there for a while, but now both of them are going to be playing at Arrowhead again, and it's a great rivalry.
Both of those teams, coaches, are playing again at Arrowhead, and when's the last time that happened?
Boy, I'm going to say it's probably been about 5 or 6 years since they've met at Arrowhead.
MU and Missouri State have new volleyball coaches, Greg, after unexpected changes. What happened there?
Well, the Kreklos at Missouri decided for health reasons that it was time for them to retire. So that was decided just a few weeks ago, shortly before all the players were scheduled to report. So that was kind of a shocker. But they had been hinting toward retirement with the athletic director at Missouri. So within the administration, it was not a complete surprise, and they were prepared. The successor was their son-in-law, so it's within the family, so to speak. So, and they've got a good team that they're fielding on the floor this year. So Missouri should be in pretty good shape. Missouri State, on the other hand, is kind of in flux right now because Melissa Stokes had been there for years and years, and they're undergoing an internal investigation, and it was just made official this week that she is out at Missouri State. So they're undergoing undisclosed reasons, internal investigation.
Dennis Dodd, what do you make of UMKC? It'll be in the Western Athletic Conference for one final year here before going back to the Summit League again, more Midwestern-based. But didn't UMKC used to be in the Summit League?
Yes.
And why are we doing this?
It's, you know, it's a big story. Greg knows this. I mean, they've almost, in this effort that we talked about at the top, to be branded Division I, they've funded this thing, maybe throwing good money after bad. They've never made the tournament. You know, they went from Municipal, now back on campus at Sweeney, and back at Summit, geographically more favorable. I don't know about the competition, but just to be Division I in the WAC, UMKC was playing in Seattle and Phoenix and Chicago and flying all over the country. Didn't make any sense. So maybe now, I think, isn't Omaha in the Summit?
Yes.
Omaha, maybe some local rivalry, something like that. But it's just it from the time it made the jump to Division I in 88 or whenever it was, 89, it's just came to drag its foot in the sand. They just can't get any traction.
What do you make of it, Greg?
I think getting back to the Summit was the best thing for them, and they aren't the only school that has done that. Oral Roberts left the Summit also and for the Southland Conference in Texas and found out that it was a mistake. It went back to the Summit as well.
You know, in women's soccer, a recruiting network called the NCSA, the Next College Student Athlete, came up with a power ranking this summer on the best NCAA Division II colleges for women's soccer. We're talking about this because Missouri State won the national championship 2 years ago.
Central Missouri did.
Central Missouri, that's right. But interestingly enough, Central Missouri isn't even listed in the top 50 this year. Cal San Diego is number one. The only other area school in the top 10 is Truman State up in Kirksville. The other area school in the top 50 is Rockhurst at number 30. Tell me about that. Well,
I saw that list and I found it interesting that that UCM isn't even present on that, and Truman State was the highest, because if you talk about the influence of the U.S. women's national team on a soccer community, I think that has spilled down to women's soccer here in this area, because there are some really, really good, solid high school and college women's soccer programs around here. And to not to see anything more than Truman State on that list was really surprising to me, especially since UCM is coming off a national championship just 2 years ago.
Okay, I saved the Kansas City Chiefs for last here. We have 45 seconds left. It's being talked about all over town. How many wins do you expect this team to get, Dennis?
12 or 13. I can't remember a time when Kansas City thought of itself and its fans as maybe the best team in the league. There's been hype before, but you can realistically think that this might be the best team in the NFL, and it's really Super Bowl or bust.
What did Dez Bryant, the wide receiver, great wide receiver, just came out and said on Twitter he feels sorry for any team that has to play the Chiefs this year?
Well, and I can't disagree with that. I mean, with the way that just they came out firing as brief as their first team offense was on the field over the weekend, I don't think you could expect anything less from them this year. And under a new defensive coordinator, the defense is expected to be upgraded as well.
Is it Super Bowl or bust this year?
Oh, absolutely. That's why they picked up Frank Clark from the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, they're putting everything they can into the window of opportunity that they have.
Okay, we'll see. Sounds like a lot of fun, a lot of good stuff going on. That was the voice of KCUR sports contributor Greg Eklund. He was joined by Dennis Dodd, a senior writer on college football for CBSSports.com. Thank you both very much. Appreciate the insights.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Tomorrow on the show, Pioneer women faced hardship and loss during their trek to the West. We'll take a closer look at the monuments in Kansas and Missouri paying tribute to their journey. You can find and follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, and Elizabeth Ruiz. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.